Colossians chapter 1 and verse 15, which says of Jesus, he is the image of the invisible God. And John 1 verse 18, no one has ever seen God, the only God who is at the Father's side, he has made him known. We're struggling a bit with the sound. Should we try on this with everything else switched off? These verses, each of which teaches something very similar, have been chosen to help us reflect on the coming of Jesus into our world. How, among other things, he reveals God to us in a unique way. I assure you we'll come to that aspect of what they say in a bit. Before we do, though, I want us to begin by considering what those verses teach about how God is ordinarily unseen, invisible even. There can scarcely be a person who hasn't been intrigued, perhaps as a child, by the idea that maybe we could become invisible. No less than 30 films and TV series have been made with titles like The Invisible Man, The Invisible Mom, and Now You See Him, Now You Don't. It was reported once that an invisible man, an invisible woman once got married. Their kids were nothing to look at, though. However, all that is the stuff of fiction, whereas as Christians, we believe in, our lives are centered around the invisible God, to borrow the Apostle Paul's very blunt term. As you'll be aware, to some that's simply absurd. Most of us would be extremely skeptical about any real life claim by a human being to be invisible. Why on earth, many would say, should you believe in a God who can't be seen? Some of the writings of the so-called New Atheists made fun of believers convinced that there's a God hiding behind the curtains, as one writer put it. Khrushchev, the Soviet premier, saw his atheism as being completely proved by the fact that Yuri Gagarin flew into space and saw no God there. So what might be said by believers in our defense? I've sometimes used the argument that there are plenty of other things that most people believe in that we can't see, like oxygen, or the atom, or the existence of distant galaxies, or of love for that matter. I think, to be honest, that's not the strongest response, because though those things aren't visible to the naked eye, there are other reliable scientific methods by which they can be apprehended. But you can't prove God's existence in that kind of way with scientific equipment. A much more persuasive response is to point out that most of the things that even we ordinary human beings create don't include their maker as a part of the picture that they paint. Most sculptures, most novels, most films, most computer games we create don't have their originator as one of the characters. Sometimes they do, but there's nothing at all surprising if they don't. In the whole of the complete works of Shakespeare, there are many hundreds of characters, but the bard himself isn't one of them. Which doesn't prove that he doesn't exist or that the plays wrote themselves, though obviously in that case it very much leaves open continuing speculation as to who exactly their author was. And so it is with our world. The fact that the creator of our material universe is ordinarily not observable as a distinct part of it isn't particularly surprising. And we might speculate, if God had arranged for his identity to be crystal clear, then it would be a very different kind of world. Imagine whenever we looked up into the sky, we saw something like God's face. Imagine that whenever we disobeyed him, something awful instantly happened, and there are always very obvious divine rewards for living his way. In some ways, all that might seem a good thing. My job as a minister trying to persuade people to follow the Christian faith would be far easier. But God isn't visible in that very obvious way. And if he was, our lives would be very different. We wouldn't have the same kind of freedom that we have now to decide to follow God or not. A believer's life wouldn't be a matter of living by faith as it's intended to be, It would just be a case of following self-evident truths and ways. The plain fact is that God is not ordinarily and straightforwardly seen by human beings. The verses we're focusing on give rise to different understandings about exactly what's meant by St. Paul and in John's Gospel, and how to square these statements with the Old Testament accounts of God revealing himself to individuals, of Moses even being permitted to see God's back. Some are inclined to rather downplay what the Old Testament texts seem to say in order to maintain what you might say is a philosophical principle of God's invisibility. Far better, it seems to me, is to say that though God is essentially invisible to the human eye, he's able, as God, to choose freely when and where to make himself visible to particular individuals. He did that to a small handful in Old Testament times. And now both John chapter 1 and the letter to the Colossians agree, he's shown himself to many through the life of Jesus. From Colossians, he is the image, the likeness of the invisible God. Just occasionally, people discover another individual who is a very close likeness of themselves. A few months ago, the story went round the world of a shoplifter caught on a CCTV system in a shop in Blackpool, who looked very like David Schwimmer, the star of Friends. As the theft of a case of beer wasn't the most serious crime, David Schwimmer played along, making a video of himself doing something very similar. Although I guess if we ever saw the two men side by side, we probably noticed there were quite a few differences between them too. Very occasionally, you hear of identical twins separated at birth who bump into their missing twin, who is an extremely close likeness. We sometimes describe one person as the spitting image of another. And Jesus is described as being the image, the likeness of God. The fact he's described as being the likeness of the invisible God discourages us from imagining that the likeness lay in anything special about Jesus' physical appearance. So rather, it must rest in his character and his actions. In the very beginning of the Old Testament, the whole of the human race had been described as being made in God's likeness. Genesis 1 says, God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. But interestingly, that language stops being used after Genesis chapter 9. And theologians have explained that in terms of the divine image in human beings being seriously marred by our sin. If you look at another person's behavior, there might be some aspects which reflect the nature of God, but for all of us, plenty that won't. Until that is the coming of Jesus, the image of the invisible God, whose character and actions perfectly reflect what God is like. In Jesus' love and welcome for all, even the outcast, we see God's love and welcome for all. In his miracles, we see God's absolute power displayed, that nothing is impossible for him. In Jesus' many challenges to his followers as to what it meant to be a disciple, we see the fullness of God's expectations on each one of us. In Jesus' prayer for those who crucified him, we see God's heart even for those who choose to reject him. Though some aspects of God's character have been spelt out in the Old Testament, the life of Jesus communicates what God is like in a way that nothing else can. When families live a distance apart, at a time like Christmas, there may be messages exchanged, a few lines in a Christmas card, or some words via a text or on Facebook. You tend to pick up a good deal more, though, from a phone call. Some people go one step further and arrange to Skype each other. Nothing can beat, of course, seeing the ones you love in person. Well, in most cases, anyway. And whereas in the Old Testament, God, in the main, communicated to his people by sending messages through the prophets, there's a far greater depth to his revelation of himself that comes through the person of Jesus, which is how the author of John's Gospel can observe, no one has ever seen God. The only God who is at the Father's side has made him known. Later on in chapter 14 of John's Gospel, Jesus makes a similar claim. Philip said to him, Lord, show us the Father, and it is enough for us. To which Jesus replied, have I been with you so long, and you still do not know me, Philip? Whoever has seen me has seen the Father. What does all that mean for us today? I think we need to be honest that the reality of Christian experience for you and for me isn't quite the same as it was for Philip and for Jesus' contemporaries. The Apostle Paul, a few years later, reflecting on how things were for believers, said, for now we see in a mirror dimly. That, remember, was in an age when mirrors were nothing like the quality we have today, but gave only a pale and sometimes slightly distorted reflection of the full reality. And Paul knew that between Christ's ascension into heaven and his second coming, the believer wouldn't have a full face-to-face knowledge of God in that kind of way. Nonetheless, even at a distance, through the Gospels, we've been given portraits of Jesus' life, which still reveal a great deal of what he showed his first disciples. Indeed, as we read of their limited apprehension at the time, in some respects at least, we can have a better understanding than they could. And so we give thanks for the birth of Christ as the start of God's revelation of himself to the world through Jesus. And these verses chosen for Christmas, which speak of how Jesus is the image of God, how Jesus has made God known, surely encourage us to go back to the gospel accounts of the rest of his ministry and teaching, to grasp all that we can, not only of Christ, but of the unseen God who through his Son is revealed far more fully to us. Amen.